6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
All right, come on, come on. Let's do this. It's Wednesday. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. You know who we are. Good morning to the aggravated man. I cannot look at Condoleezza Rice on the TV screen. What an ugly woman. Now, I don't want to just take shots at how ugly she is, but she can't take a picture, I'll tell you that. And what a lying sack of... Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I found myself getting aggravated looking at her, and I was so excited, once again, by Barbara Boxer's huge femnads. I really was. You know, I mean, thank God someone did something. I'm looking at John Kerry sitting. I had contempt for our ex-presidential candidate. Contempt just to see him sitting there. There's some part of me that just wants him to go, you know, just get up and scream and yell and say something, you know, say something, you know, in response to a voter fraud, something in response to him losing, something in response to just something. Yeah, you're just acting like nothing happened. Bothers me, Mark.
Well, I'll tell you what. John Kerry apparently saved his best barbs for Condoleezza Rice until after most of the senators had left the hearing. I don't know what the deal is with that.
I don't know.
Everybody figures, look, he's old news, he's old hat, he lost the election, whatever. And the fact of the matter is this. Barbara Boxer had guts enough to stand up and say what a lot of Americans believe about Condoleezza Rice, and that is the woman plays fast and loose with the truth.
She's just like a mouthpiece. She's a pawn. She has no integrity. And in a few minutes, we'll play that Barbara Boxer piece where all she can do after being caught in a lie is go like, you know, don't you impugn my integrity. Don't you impugn my integrity.
You calling me a liar?
Don't you call me a liar.
You want to throw some hands? It's really ironic that in all likelihood, the full Senate is going to vote to confirm this woman tomorrow. Now, the bottom line here, Mark, is this. Condoleezza Rice, as Secretary of State, is the public face of America all over the world.
What an ugly mug.
And the woman, yeah, aside from being ugly, or certainly past her prime, I really shouldn't say that because I'm older than she is.
Yeah, I don't want to get hung up on how she looks, but there's something about her, like she, no matter what angle you look at her at, it's sort of disturbing.
Well, I mean, what's disturbing is the way she chills for, in this case, her patron, President George W. Bush. She strayed not one iota away from the Bush agenda, even had the nerve to dump on Hugo Chavez, the duly elected president of Venezuela, like he was some tin-horn dictator or something. You know, and believe me, Venezuela's got oil. That's the reason why, out of all the places on earth that she has a problem with, she went out of her way yesterday in those hearings to mention Venezuela.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to play ball.
No, he doesn't want to play ball. And
it's beautiful.
It really irks the Bush administration because Venezuela's oil monopoly owns about 13,000 Citgo stations all over America, and they've been making huge sums of money with this increase in the price of gasoline. And guess what? Hugo Chavez, unlike some of our Middle Eastern friends, he's actually pouring that money into the poorest districts in Venezuela. That's what Condoleezza Rice and George W. Bush have a problem with. Hugo Chavez is empowering the poor. That's why he won that referendum. That's why he withstood their backed coup attempt. Remember, the American administration announced that coup attempt almost before it happened.
Yeah, and it irks them to see anybody do anything other than exploit the poor and make life worse for them.
Yeah, and to have American consumers to thank for the money to be able to do it. I mean, it's the perfect paradox for somebody like Condoleezza Rice. But she knows that she can go, you know, she has to go through this exercise. She has to endure the slings and arrows of Barbara Boxer and Joe Biden and the rest of these people. But she knows tomorrow, not long after her boss, George W., says, I do, she will be confirmed as America's Secretary of State.
What were you talking about to me before we come on the air? You know, the reason that the Democrats aren't going to fight this one is it's a fight they know they can't win, and you think they're going to save all their juice for the Social Security fight that could go on for a few years.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this indicates that the Democratic Party at this juncture of American history cannot chew gum and walk at the same time. There was a time that the Democratic Party would have been strong enough to both oppose Condoleezza Rice and go after Social Security. it is an indication of how weak the party is that they can't do both.
Yeah.
They just cannot at this point do both. They have to concentrate on Social Security. They figure Social Security is a winnable battle. The other problem they have, and let's be real down front about this, the Democrats, a lot of Democrats, do not want to stand in the way of the first black Secretary of State, no matter how bad she is.
Now, that to me seems wrong.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that, you know.
But there is that construct, and they know that politically the Bush people will turn that
but
on.
But Bush is using this, you know, like people like Alberto Gonzalez and people like Condoleezza Rice. Obviously, they are, you know, loyal to Bush,
mm-hmm.
but he's using that, you know, that race card, you know, to do that, to screw with the Democrats on some level, because the integrity of both of these nominees is certainly questionable. They're evil. They're liars. They're responsible for killing, you know, many, many, many people. And yet, you know, they're going to play this as that to the Democrats, and the Democrats are going to honor that frame.
Well, because they look at the construct. If, for example, and we talked about this very briefly yesterday, I know
yeah.
Wayne Gilman did it in the news, if there was substantial Democratic opposition to Condoleezza Rice, the first thing Bush would do would be to go to his faith-based friends in the black clergy and say, see what they're doing? See what they're doing? That's why you don't need to be aligned with the Democrats anymore, because they're blocking my appointment of the first black female Secretary of State.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it is a very, very smart political box that they've got the Democrats in. Now, there should be some Democrats would say, Barbara Boxer is one of them, with the stones to get up and say, I'm not going to play the game inside your box. I'm going to look at, I'm going to play the game from outside your box. If I have to throw stones at your box, so be it.
And you can hear it. You can actually hear when somebody speaks their heart and speaks outside of the box or outside, it doesn't toe the party line or the talking points. You have a, you know, just listening to her, you have a visceral reaction to somebody actually taking a risk, you know, going against the grain and speaking the truth. And you just, you know, it blows your mind because you just don't hear it anymore. You know, these people play games, and we can sit there like I literally like tomorrow. You know, we're doing tomorrow is Ignoreuration Day here, and that's
yeah.
something we've chosen to do because this is a charade. You know, we are going to talk to you know some of the you know we're going to be talking to Democrats, newly elected Democrats in the House and in the Congress in different states. We're gonna start you know talking about you know what our agenda is for the next few years because you know when I watch these things, even this hearing with Condoleezza Rice, because everybody's being so damn polite and pussyfooting around, you know, it's just a charade. It's a farce. It's almost meaningless until somebody like Barbara Boxer steps up and pounds a little truth out there and puts her on the mat, you know, and makes Condoleezza Rice basically do what we just said, like, you know, are you calling me a liar?
Yeah.
Which is the last defense of a liar. That's all you're going to do is you're going to, you know, puff up your chest and you're gonna scream and yell and indict the person that had the courage to, you know, imply that your integrity is shaky.
It's time for the Democrats to get up and throw some hands like Jack Johnson used to throw hands.
All right.
It's time for the Democrats to smother the opposition.
Yeah, it is time, but I have a feeling it's going to take some time. We're going to hear these sound bites. We're going to hear Barbara Boxer taking it to Condoleezza Rice after the break. It's 14 past the hour. Good morning. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
It's just to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about this before.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Tomorrow is Ignoreguration Day on Morning Sedition while the rest of the media is lining up to worship at the altar of the Bush puppet of the neocon death cult. We'll spend the morning talking to incoming Democrats who won in red states. If you'd like to see me this weekend, I'll be at Jimmy Tingle's Off-Broadway Theater in Davis Square, Somerville, Massachusetts, Friday and Saturday. You can go to the tour dates page on morningsedition.com for info and tickets. And if you'd like to join the Morning Sedition Book Club, purchase Sam Whipsite's Homeland going to morningsedition.com. He'll be back in the studio on January 28th to take your calls and discuss the book. Here's a little taste.
Just turn to my intimate portraits page in the yearbook, and you'll see that I was never anything approaching buck-like. Not unless there's such a thing in nature as a buck turtle.
just a taste of Homeland. The darkness, the weirdness, the bitterness, the hilarity. Homeland by Sam Lipsyth. Pick it up on MorningsEdition.com. We'll have Sam back in later in the month, actually, January 28th.
Pick it up at a discount, by the way.
Sure. That's what we're all about. We're
that's
a discounting
right.
outlet there at MorningsEdition.com. You can also go to our blog, which is more like a chat room, but nonetheless, it is there for your service. It's there for your fun and engagement. So here we go. Condoleezza Rice, who I found myself hardly able to watch out of my contempt, just for her arrogance and her the way she presents herself. I really have a problem with the woman. Here are some of the contradictions that Barbara Boxer addressed in her attack on Condoleezza, which was an attack. I don't want to use the word attack. I'd like to say her, what would we say? Not even interrogation. Is there a good word for it in her?
Questioning.
Her provocation. No, I just don't want to make it sound like she did anything wrong. Barbara Boxer did the right thing by, questioning her intensely.
Yeah.
October 7, 2002. These are some of Rice's contradictions. Bush gives a speech at the Cincinnati Museum Center. Bush says, quote, if the Iraqi regime is able to produce buy or steal an amount of highly enriched uranium a little longer than a single softball, a little larger, I think he probably meant to say, it could have a nuclear weapon in less than a year. All right, July 30th, 2003, PBS NewsHour. Rice stands by the claim she made about Saddam's nuclear program in the days and months leading up to the war. In what appears to be an effort to downplay the nuclear weapon scare tactics he used before the war. All right, Rice, quote, it was a case that said he was trying to reconstitute, he was trying to acquire nuclear weapons. Nobody ever said he was going to be there next year. All right, so October 10, 2004, Fox News Sunday, Rice was asked about CIA Director Tenet's remark that prior to the war he had made it clear to the White House, this is a quote, made it clear to the White House that he thought the nuclear weapons program was much weaker than the program to develop other WMDs. Rice, quote, the intelligence assessment was that he was reconstituting his nuclear programs, that left unchecked, he would have a nuclear weapon by the end of the year. So Rice first contradicts the president, all right, and then contradicts herself. Now, these contradictions led to this indictment from Senator Barbara Boxer during yesterday's confirmation hearings. Can we hear that, Kayla?
Here you are, contradicting the president and then contradicting yourself. So it's hard to even ask you a question about this because you are on the record basically saying taking two sides of an issue. And this does not serve the American people. If it served your purpose to downplay the threat of nuclear weapons, you said, no one said he's going to have it in a year. But then later, when you thought perhaps you were on more solid ground with the American people, because at the time the war was probably popular or more popular, you say, we thought he was going to have a weapon within a year. This is a pattern here of what I see from you on this issue, on the issue of the aluminum tubes, on the issue of whether Al-Qaeda was actually involved in Iraq, which you've said many times. It's very troubling. You know, if you were rolling out a new product like a can opener, who would care about what we said? But this product is a war. And people are dead and dying. And people are now saying they're not going to go back because of what they experienced there. And it's very serious. And as much as I want to look ahead, and we will work together on a myriad of issues, it's hard for me to let go of this war because people are still dying. And you have not laid out an exit strategy. You've not set up a timetable. And you don't seem to be willing to, A, admit a mistake, or give any indication of what you're going to do to forcefully involve others. As a matter of fact, you've said more in the statements that the territory of the terrorists has been shrinking when your own administration says it's now expanded to 60 countries. So I am deeply troubled.
Riley, do they think that the American people or that the people that are paying attention, now there's a big jump in numbers mm-hmm. between the American people and the people who are paying attention to these hearings or to what anything that Condoleezza Rice has said over the last 2 years or 3 years or 4 years. Do they just think that the collective memory is that short that they can just, you know, screw us around like this? I mean, this is still something that baffles and confounds me.
Well, here's what I think Barbara Boxer just exposed about Condoleezza Rice. Remember that when the Bush administration was in its infancy, Condoleezza Rice seemed not to know a great deal about Al-Qaeda, terrorism, or whatever. She did know a lot about Iraq. She told Sandy Berger, I believe, you know, Iraq was the issue, not the terrorism of bin Laden and the rest of these people. Now, fast forward a little bit. She was the person. She was the conduit. Bush made her the point person on Iraq as national security advisor. Okay, this, in other words, Barbara Boxer is not speaking to what she would do as Secretary of State. She was speaking to Rice's existing record as the point person, the visible face of America's presence in Iraq.
She was put in charge of the rebuilding of Iraq.
The
right?
rebuilding of Iraq, and all of what was going on went through her office. This was her job.
And it was big. It was announced with some pretty big fanfare, and then it just sort of dissipated and went away as it became clear that we were mired in a quagmire in Iraq.
Yeah, and they're still trying to put a happy face on this. And what Condoleezza Rice, unfortunately, is, I guess, subject to here is the fact that she's really not all that good at trying to turn what is obviously a horrible situation in Iraq into some kind of spin that makes it look like we're doing a great job over there.
She certainly tried.
She's trying, but you know, there's an editorial in today's New York Times that talks about this not being the time nor the place for someone to spin. This is not about that. Too many lives have been lost.
Right.
Americans and Iraqis.
Right.
To sit still for spin. What we're doing here.
Right. As Joe Biden says, you know, the time for diplomacy is long overdue. This is a time for some sort of genuine, you know, reaching out, some sort of genuine sort of idea about how we're going to, you know, resolve this thing and pull out of there or do whatever we're going to do to make this thing, you know, actually turn into, like, you know, how are we ever going to regain our status in the world? What about that?
Yeah, and that is something that Condoleezza Rice is going to have to be, again, the point person out in this second Bush administration. Scary, right?
Yes.
We're going to be right back with some more. We're going to play Condoleezza Rice's response to what Barbara Boxer said to her.
Nice.
All right, that's going to be fun. And Ray just left something out in the lobby. We'll find out what that is, too, when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition.
Yes, it is.
We're doing what we can. Tomorrow is Ignoreguration Day on Morning Sedition, and that's not supposed to be clever or cute. It's supposed to be honest. We're gonna turn our audio back on the inauguration of George Bush while the rest of the media is lining up to worship at the altar of the neocon death cult's Golden Sun King. We'll spend the morning talking to incoming Democrats who won in red states. Now, Ramon has come by wearing epaulettes and some sort of strange kind of, it looked like a Napoleon hat.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's George W. Bush's Palm Pilot for today, Wednesday, January 19th, 7 a.m. Wake up, call John Kerry, ask, so what are you doing today? 10 a.m. Call Condi, congratulate her on her testimony, and give her a friendly reminder that if she crosses me, I will crush her and everyone she loves. 5 p.m. Attend the Celebration of Freedom inaugural concert featuring the Gatlin Brothers, the Temptations, and the Rockettes. Note, wow, this is dorky even to me. 8:05 p.m. Attend Candlelight Dinner, Union Station. Note, dim lights, good food. Now's the time to invade Syria. 8:35 p.m. Attend Candlelight Dinner, National Building Museum. Note, dim lights, good food. Now's the time to invade North Korea. 10 p.m. Attend Texas Black Tie and Boots Ball. Note, that means a black tie, boots, and a tuxedo. Won't make that mistake again. 11:30 p.m. Rehearse for tomorrow. I, George W. Bush, do solemnly swear, oh, screw it, let Cheney do it. Moving on into this, into the Condoleezza Rice hearings again, Riley, the real sparring came. There was a couple of moments, there were two moments in particular that I thought, you know, Biden's another guy. Joe Biden,
Senator from Delaware.
Gets right into it, you know, with anybody he's talking to. I like the guy. He's earnest. He'll punch it out. He'll say what's on his mind, and he'll speak some, you know, truth, relative truth, to, you know, for a politician.
For a politician, yeah.
But this exchange with Condoleezza Rice and Barbara Boxer about the integrity of the intelligence and also about, you know, her reasons for going to war and the sort of flip-flopping that Condoleezza Rice did.
But by the way, before we actually play the audio of Condoleezza Rice, there's something I have to say about the way this is being covered.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just was looking at one of our papers here in New York,
mm-hmm.
and they described the exchange between Boxer and Rice as a catfight. Now, there is no other... Exactly. Number one is trivializing it. Number two, it is, to my mind, and I'm a male, so I can't really speak to this, but to me, it is very obviously sexism. They are not going to have an exchange between two men described as a catfight. I don't care how catty it might have gotten, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
A dispute between Harvey Fierstein and Elton John wouldn't be called a catfight.
Well, I don't know. Maybe
well, maybe. I could be stretching a little bit there. But the bottom line is, that's how they describe it in one of our papers, a catfight between Condi and Barbara Boxer.
And that trivializes both parties. It trivializes women. It trivializes the political process. And given that, you know, only a select number of people even follow this stuff, that they're going to come away with that. I'm sure, which paper was it? The Post?
The Daily News.
The Daily News.
Well, who's supposed to know better?
They're going to come away from that. People who don't know better are going to go, hey, you know what? The broads are fighting
again. Yeah, look at the dames go at it.
This is crazy. It's politics. The hell with that. Bush is the guy. I don't even know who these girls are. You know?
Yep.
So it just adds to the ignorance of the culture, and they're shameless about it. But it wasn't, obviously, a cat fight. This was a very, you know, precise, you know, courageous investigation on behalf of Barbara Boxer, you know, in putting this woman, you know, taking her to task. Can we hear that, Chris?
It wasn't just weapons of mass destruction. He was also a place, his territory was a place where terrorists were welcomed, where he paid suicide bombers to bomb Israel, where he had used Scuds against Israel in the past, and so we knew what his intentions were in the region, where he had attacked his neighbors before and, in fact, tried to annex Kuwait, where we'd gone to war against him twice in the past. It was the total picture, Senator, not just weapons of mass destruction that caused us to decide that post-September 11th, it was finally time to deal with the
problem. Well, you should read what we voted on when we voted to support the war, which I did not, but most of my colleagues did. It was WMD, period. That was the reason and the causation for that, you know, particular vote. But again, I just feel you quote President Bush when it suits you, but you contradicted him when he said, yes, Saddam could have a nuclear weapon in less than a year. You go on television 9 months later and said nobody ever said it was going
to be. That was just a question of pointing out to people that there was an uncertainty, that no one was saying that he would have to have a weapon within a year for it to be worth it to go to war.
Well, if you can't admit to this mistake, I hope that you'll...
Senator, we can have this discussion in any way that you would like, but I really hope that you will refrain from impugning my integrity. Thank you very much.
I'm just quoting what you said. You contradicted the president, and you contradicted yourself.
Senator, I'm happy to continue the discussion, but I really hope that you will not imply that I take the truth lightly.
But you take the truth lightly.
Very lightly.
You know, she got defensive. She did what every liar does when they get cornered, you know. And even her little list at the beginning, it distracts from the fact that all this administration did was try to connect al-Qaeda and the idea of Iraq and weapons of mass destruction, you know, with no, you know, significant intelligence on any of them to sell the war to the American people.
Well, you know, when she says, well, we went to war with him twice. Yeah, well, you went to war against him twice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you went to war with him once. And her boy, Donald Rumsfeld, was the point man in seeing to it that Saddam had the weapons he needed to fight the war against Iran.
And also to exterminate, a bunch of the Kurds.
A bunch of the Kurds as well, when the Kurds were left hung out to dry.
Yeah, where was that part of the list?
Well, that wasn't on the list. There was a lot of stuff that wasn't on the list. And to say, well, he fired Scuds at Israel. Yes, he fired Scuds at Israel. He fired Scuds at Israel during the course of the first Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he didn't just wake up one morning and say, let's fire Scuds at Israel. That's not to say what he did was right. But what I'm saying is, you know, a lot of what America has done has been justified because we are at war with Iraq. Well, Saddam fired Scuds at Israel because he thought that the Israelis were going to somehow involve themselves in the war against him.
Right.
You know?
Now, but the thing that frustrates me, Riley, is that no matter what we say here today, there's absolutely no chance that this woman is not going to be confirmed.
She's going to be the Secretary of State. She's going to be the public face of American foreign policy. And I fear, deeply fear, how the rest of the world is going to deal with that, because this is not a situation. Colin Powell was as close to a yes man for this administration as we need as Secretary of State.
Right.
And he was not always on the bus. That's why eventually he was shown the door. Now we've got somebody who says right off the top, I am not going to deviate from this particular policy, and it is a scary policy. Put what Condoleezza Rice is talking about next to what Cy Hirsch wrote about, which has never been, by the way, categorically denied by the Pentagon. I don't care what they said.
He's rattled the whole planet, man.
He's rattled the whole planet. He's rattled Iran. He has rattled the entire Middle East. He's rattled South Asia. He's rattled everybody, because what it says is that this administration is prepared to conduct endless warfare.
Yeah.
Endless warfare.
No one denied it.
No one denied it. They said the thing was full of errors, but they didn't say what the errors were.
And they were like, sort of like, and the problem is with endless warfare? Is there some sort of problem?
Well, yeah. And by the way, he was wrong, but we do reserve our right to intervene militarily in Iran, which is what he said.
Yeah. The neocon death cult loves endless warfare. It's what makes them feel strong. It's what they think will work in the world as far as, you know, deterring terrorism, as far as global management. They don't think in terms of creating more terrorism, creating more resistance, creating more contempt, creating more possibilities for some, you know, random, you know, enlightened lunatic to, blow something up in a very big way again.
You know, the question that I think has to be asked about Condoleezza Rice in the most general sense, and this was a question that I asked and took a lot of flack for it, actually, when George Bush's father named Clarence Thomas to the Supreme Court. And that question is, and I say this as an African-American talking about an African-American, so everybody's clear, couldn't you find anybody better?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Some people may say I'm a race traitor for saying that, but the bottom line is Condoleezza Rice, no more than Clarence Thomas, is the best person for this gig.
Mm-mm.
Clarence Thomas wasn't for the court. Mm-mm. She's not for Secretary of State. We have far better statesmen in America. As a matter of fact, one of them's leaving now, and I say that with some guarded emotions about Colin Powell. But the bottom line is, Colin Powell was a much better diplomat than Condoleezza Rice ever thought about being.
Does she even know how to be a diplomat? She seems to have that same social awkwardness that Bush has, where, you know, if they are in any environment other than the ones that they are comfortable in, they look completely out of place, they look completely self-conscious, they look, there's a smugness to them that, it's totally unattractive, and it shows real amateur chops in terms of showing respect for other dignitaries around the world, for showing respect for other countries around the world. I just think she's horrendous.
What's going to happen, folks, when Condoleezza Rice sits back and says, oh, no, we have nothing to do with any coup attempt or coup plots in Venezuela?
Mm-hmm.
But yet American intelligence is probably working on just that. I pick on Venezuela specifically because that was where Condoleezza Rice showed her true face.
Okay. We'll be back in a second. We're going to talk about church and state, of course. We're going to talk about Michael Newdow's struggle to get the swearing-in prayer out of the inauguration, and also Cobb County, of course. It's 45. Wait, talk, Mark. 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Yeah.
That's what's going on. I can't hear myself in my head. What happened? Turn me up there. Yes, there I am.
You got it?
Yeah, there. Oh, nice. There's me in my head. You know, when you do a radio show, if you're out there in the world driving in your car and you're not wearing headphones, we wear headphones all the time. We can hear ourselves talk out loud. It's like me listening to me on the radio.
It's like an echo chamber in your brain. But, you know, while we were on break, there was a slight technical problem.
Mm.
And our genius engineering / IT guy, Juan, came in here and fixed the problem.
Well, I think we got to throw a bone to Kalo, our board op.
Yeah, Kalo.
Who found the problem.
Yes, he did.
Who just sat there and gave you a dirty look when he called Juan a genius.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I saw it, buddy.
Okay, all right, Kalo, you're genius number two. How about that?
I saw that, man. So, Kalo, how's the cup of noodles thing going? Pretty good?
It's great, man.
Yeah, it's
had
good,
had another
man.
One today?
Yeah.
I had one when I got home yesterday,
that's
too.
That's great, man. That's great. You know,
that's my life.
You know what's going to happen, though, don't you? At some point, you're going to walk in and you're going to say, I can never eat another cup
noodle,
of noodle
yeah.
again.
I had that happen
again.
To me with sardines, man. You know, when I went to college,
sardines.
My mother sent me with, like, I don't know how many cases of sardines and cases of string beans.
Dude.
It got so bad for me that I was eating sardines and with string bean garnish in a sandwich with mayonnaise for days. On end. This was in the late 60s, early 70s, when, you know, that kind of thing was, you know, so it kind of proved you were down with the revolution,
awful.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sardines and string beans.
Sardines and string beans.
Is that part of the Revolutionary Manifesto at that time? I had not heard about that.
Thou shalt eat mommy's food.
Is that what that was?
What that was.
So look, that girl, the Ohio teenager, Ashley Faulkner, this is the one who was in the ad, the Ashley story, the pro-Bush campaign ad that aired nearly like 30,000 times in the month before election of November 2nd. She's the one that lost her mother in the September 11th attacks, and Bush hugged, and, you know, and it was very
touching.
I guess they're saying that it pulled around, you know, a lot of voters, that it was the most significant ad campaign of the campaign. Well, she, I guess, and her dad have gotten, and her sister and brother, perhaps. How many are there? There's a few. Well, they're all going to the inauguration. And they got the good seats. And I just hope they know, you know, not to look the man, not to look the Sun King in the eyes. I mean, because we were going over these rules yesterday for tomorrow's inauguration, which we won't be covering.
Yeah.
About the, you know, all the participants in the parades, you know, have been warned that they will not be allowed to leave the tents, the warmed tents that they are going to be in, unless they have to go to the porta potty.
And then they have to get a hall pass.
They have to get a hall pass. And other instructions given performers include they cannot look directly at Bush while passing the presidential reviewing stand, nor to look to either side, nor to make any sudden movements. Apparently, there's going to be so many snipers focused on, you know, on what could go wrong that you got to be careful. You don't want the tuba player, you know, making a shift. You know what I mean? Yeah. So here's a word out to Ashley and her family. You know, it's great that you've been invited, that you and your dad are going to be with President Bush on this exciting day. But by all means, please don't go for a Kleenex. All right.
Yeah.
And please tell your dad, you know, just to be careful and not to get too excited when he sees the Sun King.
Yep. And those military units that are going to be marching past the reviewing stand, when they say eyes right, don't.
Right. Here's some other rules. No one is allowed to be taller than the president, or else look out. All right. Everybody's got to be roughly the same height or a little shorter. No one is allowed to be thinner than the president. He's very sensitive about this. You know, that who's that rail sitting down front? Take him out. Good. Okay, no eye rolling and sighing at the president, that's out. So, you know, if you get caught, remember, there are going to be snipers watching for this through telescopic lenses. You know what I mean? If you're, you know, if you're sitting next to somebody who's rolling his eyes, look for that red laser dot on his forehead because, ooh, and clean that up off the person behind him because that's going to be messy.
Who's next?
No uncontrollable weeping at the president. Not even in a good way, all right, because that's suspect, too. So if you see somebody starting to simper, you know, just, is that the word, simper?
Whimper.
Whimper?
Yeah.
Just be careful and, you know, and slowly hand them a Kleenex because if you whip it out too fast out of caring for your neighbor, oh, that was a quick one. That one fell right down. Quick. And no floats that have writing on them because that intimidates the president. And no hybrid engines on the floats because we know that would insinuate that his energy policy is bad.
Yes.
So also, now let's get on to the Michael Newdow story, which is that he has been, you know, trying to basically get the under God from the Pledge of Allegiance. He tried to get out of the under God. He tried to get out of the Pledge of Allegiance and was only, you know, was thrown out of court on a technicality. Basically, he was doing it in defense of his child, his daughter, in terms of, you know, having a separation between church and state and not having religion infiltrate her in the public school systems. And the only reason they threw it out was because he didn't have custody of his daughter. So he had a point, and they knew he had a point, and now he's trying to make a point about the the prayer that is said at the inauguration of the president. And that doesn't look like it's going to go through. What do you think, Mark?
Well, it probably won't. He's facing a real problem in that the person that usually hears an emergency appeal like this, because remember, the inauguration is tomorrow, would be Chief Justice William Rehnquist, he who is very sick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Newdow has already asked that Rehnquist recuse himself because he's the one that's administering the oath of office that Newdow obviously has a problem with.
Right.
So at that point, you have to ask yourself, A, is Rehnquist going to be well enough to administer the oath of office? If he's not, then who is going to administer the oath of office, and whether or not Newdow would then have to ask that that justice recuse his or herself.
I just like this guy's moxie.
He's got guts. I give him all the credit in the world. And look, you know, these are issues that they may appear nitpicking to some people, but then the whole question of whether or not, you know, Americans have access to porn in hotel rooms might seem nitpicking. But you see the conservatives going after that, don't you?
Yeah, I just think, like, it's great that he's getting press, and it's great that these issues are on some level at the forefront, even though they may seem unimportant to some people. You know, that, you know, that, that church and state may be considered a wedge issue to some people, or they... that it's very significant. But when we come back, we'll find that in Cobb County, in Marietta, Georgia, that they're appealing. They're appealing the stickers that say evolution is silly.
Yep.
Here we go. Here's the liberal agenda. One last-minute pre-inaugural preparations. Tomorrow is not one damn dime day. And for vegans, not one damn burger day. And for atheists, not one damn God day. And for lesbians, not one damn penis day. Two, iron your pants so when you turn your back on Bush during the parade, it's smooth and neat for the cameras. Three, hire band caterers and valet parking for anti-inaugural party to protest the fat cats living it up in Washington today. Four, cry over tragedy of Bush's inaugural first thing in the morning, then no more today or tomorrow. Must put on brave face. We're moving on. Five, today's phrase just dropped in the conversation. Yeah, I have a question for Dr. Rice. How do you sleep? Answer me that, man. Wake up, sheeple. It's coming down.
In the next hour, as I drop my pen, I'm spaz, my goodness. Anyway, we're going to talk about Cobb County. We're going to have the Dream Diary and more here on Air America Radio.
Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, the disgruntled, the happy, the elated, the medicated. Good morning to you all. Good morning to you, Kalo, on the board. Good morning to Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Clutch Larson in the booth. Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, out in the world foraging for things, of little fragments and tidbits of information. Brendan P.W. McDonald, don't know where he is. Have no idea. He's downstairs. Downstairs doing the big work, accumulating information, laying it out. We've got a big staff here. Not really. We've got a small crew, a cabal, a little boys club here in the middle of the night at Air America Radio doing the work. Kent the Colonel Jones downstairs. Who's with Kent today? Did you see? Which one of the boys?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know who it is, but they're all down there working. Tomorrow is Inauguration Day on Morning Sedition. All right, that may sound cute and clever or whatever, but we're turning our back on an audio level towards this event because we would rather showcase the morning talking to incoming Democrats who won in red states. Red states. Speaking of red states, Mark Riley.
Yo.
Red states are getting screwed. How do you like that?
Right along with the blue state.
I hate to see people suffer, but, you know, you pick the guy. You pick the guy. It's a sad thing. And most of it revolves around Medicare and Medicaid.
Yes.
In Florida, Governor Jeb Bush is proposing a Medicaid plan called Empowered Care. That's like ownership society.
Yeah. Right?
They like these words. That would, in effect, turn Medicaid over to private plans that could encourage insurers to cherry-pick the healthiest and least expensive beneficiaries, endangering the level of benefits offered to low-income families. So that's sort of like, yeah, I will treat that. Oh, no, you're poor, and that's not treatable. I guess you'll have to die. I hope you have enough kids to carry on your legacy, because we can't fix what's wrong with you. Hey, Mr. Rich Guy, you have cancer? We'll do everything we can to try and fix your cancer. cancer because you have plenty of money to put back into the system.
Call in a specialist immediately.
In Tennessee, Governor Phil Bredesen announced he is cutting 323,000 low-income adults from the state's Medicare program and limiting services for 400,000 others. Like many other governors, Bredesen is said that Tennessee's expanded Medicaid program is devouring the state's budget and that he cannot afford what had been hailed as one of the most generous government plans in the nation. All right, this dude is basically saying the 323,000 people, sorry, if you get sick, I don't know. You know, do you know people? Are there any sort of faith healers? Maybe you're religious people. Maybe you should get faith healed because we can't give you real medicine.
And the burden for all this, Mark, is going to fall back on cities. Because in many cases, you have cities in Tennessee, places like Memphis, where you have progressive leadership who has been at the forefront of providing these kinds of benefits and probably they don't want to give them up. Their constituents need them.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to figure out a way to make up the shortfall if the state makes cuts. We're going to see that right here in New York, where just the other day, Governor George Pataki, a red governor of a blue state, announced a $1 billion cut in state Medicaid funding. $1 billion. Now, guess who's that going to fall on?
But how come people don't call this what it is? These are human sacrifices.
Yes, they are.
This is what, you know, this is a way of killing through negligence, of killing based on class, of killing, you know, based on, money, obviously.
Ability to pay.
Exactly. And it's like, I don't know why no one really draws attention to this, especially in these states that voted this guy in for moral issues or out of fear of a manufactured threat in a lot of cases.
Because Bush has got this kind of thing down to a science. You'll notice that the stories are slugged. The governors are making the cuts. All right. The governors are making the cuts in response to cuts in federal funding to states.
The neocon death cult initiation of Republican governors to sacrifice their poor at the altar of health care.
Yes, and they will continue to do so because Bush has said at you know, 5 minutes after he was reelected, we're going to have a disciplined budget. A disciplined budget means that you have to, at some point, and all of his conservative backers want to see this happen, they want to cut so-called entitlement programs. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, three entitlement programs, according to these guys, that they feel need to be cut or revamped so the federal government is not kicking out as much money because it's in line with their notion that the federal government should interfere as little as possible with what the states do and what the states can pay.
It also comes under my theory of saying that, you know, all you dummies who believe that evolution is hokum, you should really realize that the administration you so heartily believe in believes in evolution because they're pretty damn sure that the lower income and poor people of this country will adapt to whatever crap they put them through. So they're real proponents of evolutionary theory, social Darwinism in action. They don't care if you die. They don't care. They just expect eventually maybe you'll stop getting sick if we don't treat it enough. Maybe whatever strand of viral disaster you have in your family will go away once they all die off. Because they're not going to pay to cover you. And this goes with the pharmaceutical industries as well. Bristol-Myers Squibb is one of the big funders of the inauguration. These are people, these are corporations, $250,000 to become an underwriter of the inaugural. Now, Bristol-Myers Squibb, along with Merck, is quietly seeking federal approval to sell low-dose, non-prescription versions of older cholesterol drugs that already have generic competition. These guys will pay money at any opportunity to get more money out of people that need help. Me, yesterday, Mark Maron, Mark Riley, I get cold sores. I'll be honest, a little souvenir from hell. A little, I don't know where I got it. I don't know where it started. You know, I don't remember. I think it was pre my sort of, you know,
punishment for your past sins.
I know, but I think I actually got them before I started, doing
sinning.
Doing the bad stuff. I don't know, but I get them on my lip occasionally, and I go get medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I had a refillable prescription for Famvir, which is not something I usually take. I usually take the generic, a Cyclovir. All right, but my doctor was out of town the last time I got one, and the new guy, you know, said the brand name is the one to go with. And stupidly, because I grew up in a medical household, I listened to doctors. My father was a doctor. So I'm like, well, this is better. He's like, this is much better. So I didn't remember what I paid last time, but then my insurance did a little turnover in January, so I had to repay the deductible. You have to see 15 tablets for $118, and it was going to be like $175 without the coverage, and I think I had a deductible. I got to look into it, but I went ahead and paid it like an idiot, and this is basically a vanity medicine on some level. I just don't want to, you know, have this, you know, gaping, open, festering thing on my mouth, but $118, and I know I could have got the generic for like $30, and it was all because this doctor told me that a brand name was better, and it probably wasn't. You know, it was probably, you know, just some sort of, you know, this is what they sell. They listen to the pharmaceutical representative who says this is a new hot thing, you know, and I'm mad at myself. I'm mad at the pharmaceutical industry for not enabling us to have, you know, practically priced, you know, medical, you know, pharmaceutical product.
Well, the pharmaceutical companies pay this money. See, people are going to say, well, why would a pharmaceutical company pay for help pay for Bush's inauguration? Because they want continued access to the corridors of power in Washington, so that when the time comes, you know, Cheney during the first term, at the beginning of the first term, sat down and met with the energy execs to help formulate energy policy. Don't think for a minute that these companies and representatives and lobbyists for these companies won't have a role in shaping Bush's health care policy, so that, you know, poor folks will end up having to pay more and more and more of their disposable income to stay stay healthy.
Well, dig this. Georgia, right? Red states getting screwed more. Medicaid cuts. Georgia, the state tightened the income eligibility limit for 7,500 low-income pregnant women.
Yep.
And their infants. The state also halted coverage for 1,700 medically needy nursing home patients. These are nursing home patients, sorry. And this is the same state that is trying to appeal a ruling made by a judge that says it is, you know, it denies the separation of church and state when you put stickers in the textbooks that say evolution is a theory. It's a theory. I mean, you know, open your mind to it, but, you know, don't put too much credence into it, because we're trying to not only apparently kill our poor pregnant women and their kids and our older people, but we're trying to make the kids of this state as ignorant as possible so they go on, you know, marching to the neocon death cult crystal fascist zombie brigade tune. We're going to talk about this in a minute, Riley. It's 16 past the hour on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hey, 20 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
All right, man. So I'll be in Boston this weekend at Jimmy Tingle's Off-Broadway Theater in Davis Square in Somerville, Massachusetts, this Friday and Saturday. You can go to the tour dates page on morningsedition.com for info and tickets. Listen, my buddy Sam Lipsitz, his book Homeland is the first book of the Morning Sedition Book Club. If you want to join, you can go purchase Homeland at morningsedition.com. Sam will be back on January 28th to take your calls and discuss the book. How about a little taste of Sam Lipsitz?
We didn't have squash at Eastern Valley. We didn't have tennis either, unless you count that trick with the steel hairbrush and the catgut racket, whereby the butt skin of the weak was flayed.
Yeah, so if that piques your interest at all, it's a brilliant book. It's a dark, sardonic sort of tome. It's composed of dispatches of a not bitter, but certainly a self-centered, reflecting kind of. What's the word? He is sort of a failure, but it sort of catches
him in
the
right. Why is he a failure?
No, because he is.
He's got a he's married. He's got a little. No,
I'm talking about the book. The book.
Oh, the book. Oh,
Sam,
okay.
Sam's not a failure. But the book is a series of dispatches to a high school newsletter, and it really captures a lot of the themes that, you know, if you grew up in this country and you grew up in a small city and you went to a public high school, this will be very satisfying because all your bile will be vindicated. Is that the word I'm looking for?
Vindicated is the word.
Vindicated bile. Now, I don't know about this. My bile has not been vindicated around this Cobb County thing. Members of the suburban district of the Marietta County, Cobb County, school board plan to challenge the federal judge's order to remove stickers in science textbooks that call evolution, quote, a theory, not a fact. Now, I thought this was, you knew they were going to, appeal this, huh, Riley?
Yeah, I did. I mean, look, when it comes to this sort of thing, these folks are never going to give up. And I have to say, if progressives can learn anything from people like this, it's that they're tenacious. They don't stop just because they lose something.
And this has been going on since the Scopes trial. I mean, this has been going on for generations. It's the same type of momentum that, you know, you have these conservatives that have been wanting to do nothing but tear down the New Deal since day one, since Franklin Delano Roosevelt was in office. They get very committed to trying to break this down, and they're willing to wait.
But see, this is the problem, and you really capsulized it and crystallized it, I should say, before the break. How in the world, in a state where pregnant women are being denied access to health care, can people sit up and talk about appealing a ruling on creationism? How in the world can you form your lips to say that these two things are of anywhere near equal importance?
Yeah, why don't you behave like Christians? Well, then one of the reasons is Cobb County School Board members who voted to appeal a judge's ruling ordering them to remove anti-evolution stickers from student science books. Lindsay Tippins is one. He was educated with a bachelor's degree from Georgia State University, a law degree from Woodrow Wilson School of Law. His profession, he's a pipeline contractor. And there's a quote from Lindsay.
A lawyer who's a pipeline contractor?
Yeah, he must have done well.
He knows where the money is.
Yeah. Quote, raise the standard. This is why he would. Raise the standard of education in Cobb County by assuring that the basics will be taught and reestablishing discipline and respect for authority in our schools. That's his top priority in office if he would be elected to the king of the Board of Education in Cobb County. But wouldn't you think that the priority of a school board king would be to make education the priority, to make sure the students are given a good education, not reestablishing discipline?
You want a window to this man's soul?
Yeah.
Here's another quote. He's talking about the Confederate flag. It's not, in my mind, a racist symbol or an inflammatory symbol. There's a lot of regional pride in the South.
Yeah.
So you want to reestablish discipline and authority in the schools? What, you want to hang Confederate flags up?
Well, look, you know, you can call these cats. You can do, you know, I don't know if you can call them, but you can certainly contact Cobb County, Georgia school board members to tell them to stop trying to teach religion in public schools. We put their home numbers on the links page at morningsedition.com.
Give them a jingle. Give them a jingle. Now, this was a 5-2 vote. There's 7 members on the Cobb County Board of Education. 5 of them voted to appeal this ruling. Now, what they don't, so far, $74,000 of Cobb County taxpayers' money has been spent trying to, allow these stickers to stay. $74,000. Now, if you start breaking that down, and I don't know what their per pupil expenditure is, mm-hmm. but my guess is $74,000 could probably educate at least 5 Cobb County students for a year.
Mm-hmm.
All right? I'm being real conservative here. So why are they spending this money?
Well, they've got their priorities. They want to promote ignorance in the schools and narrow the minds of the children. Look at this. In the science section of the Georgia State High School graduation exam, Cobb County student scores have dropped over the past 2 years. In 2002, 88% passed the science section, but in 2004, only 80% passed the science section. It's working.
Stickers are working well.
The stickers are working. The kids of Cobb County are becoming more ignorant and stupid.
It's a miracle.
Yes. You know, you guys are doing great work down there. Ignorance and stupidity is on the rise in Cobb County, and it just goes to show with these numbers in the science section of the exam. Tremendous work, and I'm the appeal. I hope that, you know, by next year we can get these numbers down to 75% or 70%, and pretty soon maybe they'll have no concern with science whatsoever, and you'll actually succeed in producing more religious, mentally retarded children. So, and this is not a birth and not a genetic retardation. You're actually promoting religious-based retardation in the schools of Cobb County. Congratulations, Cobb County.
Nice work. They're not the only ones, though. You know, there's Dover, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
All right. We're where they have an administrator reading a one-minute statement to ninth graders in biology class, saying that evolution is not fact, and offering that approach that we've come to know and loathe as intelligent design.
Intelligent design. I don't understand it. It must be magic. It's magic. It's so complicated. There's no way to explain it. It's magic. And when I die, I get wings and eternal life. 866-303-2270. Dream interpretation coming up next. Call us with your dreams, and we'll take them apart. 866-303-2270, along with the Dream Diary coming up next, Mark Riley.
We got it. This is Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
Morning's Edition. We're taking your calls with your dreams. And I'm not talking about your goals, ambitions, or possibilities of the future. I'm talking about your real dreams that are churning out of your unconscious, your screaming id regurgitations. 866-303-2270.
And not that stuff that you saw in the porn movie, okay?
That's right. And I got my dream from last night. When do I go to therapy? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
I'm going to have a little coffee.
Ooh.
Ah, that's good. Sorry, I had a mouthful of Rice Krispie treats. It's a big party here, man.
That was what that was?
Since they put that damn coffee shop down the lobby. You know, here I was when they're putting a Starbucks. I'm like, you know, thank God I don't drink Starbucks anymore. But, you know, within seconds of it being there, I'm like, I'm going to go get a Starbucks. And now I'm like, you know, literally, we used to get a coffee from across the street from a local place, right?
Not anymore.
Now I'm like, the guys, our intern, Alon's going out. I'm like, can I get a Starbucks coffee, please? Not by name. Starbucks. They got, you know, and I don't drink Starbucks at all. I drink Chock Full of Nuts at home.
I know, but Starbucks is like, it sucks you in, man. You go in the lobby now, what's the first thing you smell?
Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
Here's my dream last night. All right. It's inauguration day. My inauguration. I wake up to nightmares. Nightingales. I wake up to nightingales singing, and then I'm bathed and anointed and draped in golden robes. I'm carried by Secret Service agents to a waiting silver chariot pulled by all nine Supreme Court justices who are wearing snow-white togas. All along the route, people sing hymns of praise and specially composed cantatas of my glorious deeds. Apple-cheeked children toss rose petals in my path. Artisans erect hundreds of golden idols of Mark Maron, some of me on horseback, pointing toward the future. The air smells of burnt offerings. Slaughtered calves and hogs awash in barbecue sauce rotate over open flames for my dining pleasure. Before me, my enemies trudge along in chains. And just to remind them of who's boss, I make them wear hillbilly hats and floppy clown shoes. From the crowd, Kid Rock rushes forward, kisses the hem of my garment, and begs to perform for me. I say, "No way, man. Sit down. You're such a loser." When I arrive at the Capitol, all the ex-presidents are there, on one knee, heads bowed. Ford, Carter, Bush, the first, Clinton. And as I pass, all avert their eyes, except Clinton, who winked at me. Cheeky bastard. Then Rehnquist approaches me somberly, wearing an archbishop's hat. I put my hand on the Bible. I raise my hand. I take the oath. Rehnquist makes the sign of the cross and the Chase Manhattan Bank, and then places a bejeweled crown on my brow. Doves are released. Trumpets split the air, and bells ring from sea to shining sea. The crowd on the mall cheers ecstatically for an hour and weeps for joy. I give them a little smile and raise my hand, and instantly they are silent. With grave dignity, I approach the mic and I say, "So, what do you guys want to do?" I woke up and my bed was filled with the burden of empire.
There you go.
Let's take some dreams. Steve, listen into the mic in Madison. Steve, what do you got?
Hey, Steve.
How are you guys doing this morning?
Pretty good.
Excellent.
I'm over my interview of Tom Petty, by the way.
That was hilarious yesterday. Steve calls up yesterday, and we were, what the hell were we talking about? That provoked the Tom Petty thing. I'm trying to.
It was my anger, my liberal confession of anger to other liberals.
Right, it was the anger. If you just like blasted, you're like, "And where the hell was Tom Petty when all this was happening?"
I believe I ended up spewing out that he's probably sitting somewhere in a hollow tree laughing.
Yes, but Tom Petty, it's like, out of all the people, just because you like him, you expected him to do something for the thing?
Well, I actually met the man once, but that's for another day.
Okay, so what was your dream, Steve?
Well, I dreamt that I was going to the movies to see a movie. The Seinfeld came back, and it was in a movie, you see, okay?
Okay.
And slowly what happened by degrees, you know how it's strange with dreams, it all gets surreal and it all changes. Suddenly I'm seeing a movie with Jerry and George.
Yeah.
All right, and now they're both being fussy, they don't want to sit up too close, they
right.
don't want to sit up too much up front,
right.
too much in back.
Yes.
But we get to the dream part. Now, I gotta say that when I work at Strange Hours from 2 to 11, I work for People for the American Way, where we're drumming up money to keep ultra-conservatives off the Supreme Court.
Good for you.
Yes, I should be rewarded for that.
Do you need more than that? Or
No.
Let me do a little more. Yay!
Yeah. Nice work.
Excellent. All right.
Hey, well, anyway, I have to sleep at strange hours, and I was listening to Randy Rhodes at the time. Okay?
She works here.
Yeah.
I know. I listen to Air America when I'm sleeping, and that don't happen too much, I got to tell you.
Okay.
But anyway, during this dream, she must have been complaining about Condi Rice, okay, and why not? And I looked over to George. And suddenly, George was Condi Rice.
So you're at the movies with Seinfeld and Costanza. Costanza turns into Condi Rice at the movies.
And yes. Seinfeld says...
He didn't... that's where it ended. I woke up in a sweat. I mean, for God's sake.
Yeah,
I was afraid that George was reaching for my hand, and here it is. It's Condi Rice, you know?
That's even more frightening. You would have been more comfortable if George was, right?
Well, I think George would have been a little more comfortable with me.
It's just the power of the black woman.
Well, here's what I got to tell you. First of all, stop falling asleep on the remote. Because I think what happened was, you know, your head was like not just Randy Rhodes. Maybe the TV was on. He went from Seinfeld and then rolled over, and it was the Condi Rice hearings.
Well, that's the weird part. I haven't seen Seinfeld for weeks because my schedule,
Well, I tell you, I think that you know, you are so plagued with liberal guilt and anger that, you know, you can't even dream properly anymore. You're horrified at Condi Rice, and there's only one thing to do.
What's that?
Call Tom Petty. You got to call Tom Petty and tell him that, you know, maybe he should make an appearance in your head.
Well, I got to tell you this. Whenever I see Condi Rice and Bush together, I'm thinking Frank Burns and Margaret Houlihan.
Ooh.
You know? Never have so many suffered. So that so few could be so happy.
I'm going to tell you what we're going to do after the break. The next break, we'll play our Endless Love thing for you. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, Linda, listening to Eric. Atlanta, WWAA. How are you, Linda?
Linda.
What's the dream?
Hey, good morning.
Yay.
Hey, listen, God bless you guys for what you're doing. We need you. Our democracy's really in trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
So what's on your mind?
Embarrassed to say that I'm from Georgia right now.
That's okay. There's a lot of good people in Georgia.
There's good people in Georgia?
Oh, yeah. Hey, listen, my dream, I had this wonderful, very vivid dream once of flying naked over a river.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of foggy, like at dusk, and it was the most peaceful feeling. And then all of a sudden, I was flying over townhouses, and these little kids were trying to drag me down out of the air.
Really?
Wow.
And it was just like, leave me alone.
Oh, that's so great. So
hey,
what?
I'm a grandma now. Maybe, you know.
Huh?
I'm a grandma now.
Okay.
So, hey, listen.
What?
What? This thing about Cobb County, those people are freaks.
Okay.
I live in Rockdale County. Do you remember the PBS show a few years ago about the syphilis and everything in Rockdale County with the teenagers?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're predominantly Republican out here, too.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm a progressive. I'm, like, surrounded.
So that let me ask you a question about Cobb County, and then I'm going to take a shot at your dream because I thought it was pretty interesting.
You mean Snob County.
Snob County.
Snob County.
Snob County. Yeah.
Okay.
White place.
But what are they? Is there a lot of religious fanaticism? Is there an arrogance to their religiosity?
Oh, yeah, these people are crazy. You know what? I tell you what. The big thing is, and I work for the Rockdale Democratic Party, MoveOn.org, the Bake Back, the White House, Bake Sale. You know, we worked really hard to try to get Karen Edwards in office.
Yes.
But the big issue, I think, with the religious fanatics is the abortion issue.
Right.
And I swear, you know, I think that sometimes, I don't know, I just...
Well, I'll tell you your dream.
It's hard if a woman's had an abortion.
Sure.
And she's got to live with it.
Yeah.
And I don't really think it's right, but I hate to think that my daughter... who was also a progressive,
yes.
Okay, that if she accidentally got pregnant, that she would have to quit college and everything and ruin her life. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. No, people should, it's really a civil rights issue. It's not a civil rights issue, but a human rights issue to have control over your own body and be able to have, safe, healthy, health care. But the flying dream is, to dream that you were flying signifies a sense of freedom where you had initially felt restricted and limited. It's a very interesting dream she had because she was flying naked over mountains and over a river, and then all of a sudden these kids in townhouses tried to take her down. It's so classic. It's like, your freedom is over.
Yes.
Yeah,
your time is done.
I hate to tell you, now that you're a grandmother, I think that, I think you're feeling a little, as much as you love them, you're a little restricted by their existence in the world. They're calling you, Grandma. No more flying naked over rivers. And thanks for telling us about Cobb County. If you have a dream, you want to share it, 866-303-2270 is our number. We'll be taking more dreams after the break. Right, Riley?
We will. And, there's some people that are insisting that their dreams are real. That means we got some humdingers coming up.
Okay, 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour. Morning's Edition with Mark Maron. That's me and Mark Riley, who's over there.
Hi.
We're taking calls. That's a great song. Warren Zevon, R.I.P.
Sounded like the beginning of Sweet Home Alabama there for a minute.
It's Werewolves of London, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. 866-303-2270. We're taking dreams from you and putting them on the air and taking a shot at analysis. Here we go. Barney, listening to LIV in Manhattan. Good morning, Barney. What was your dream?
Hey, guys.
Hey, man. You all right? You all right?
Okay, just a quick back. So I've been having an email argument with my brother, my crazy Republican brother.
Okay.
Very friendly. Like, I email him stuff from Media Matters, and he emails me links to the Drudge Report, and I email him back saying he's dumb. And then
that's very nice.
So, all right, so in the dream, I'm just sitting around my apartment like a good liberal.
Yeah.
What liberals do when they're in apartments by themselves. So I'm masturbating. And
you're not reading The Economist? You're not looking at The Nation? What's wrong with you?
If I'm allowed to embellish, maybe I'm doing both.
Okay.
So somebody, unbeknownst to me, somebody's filming it from an apartment across the way.
Yes.
That link gets emailed to my brother. He plasters it all over the net. My crazy Republican brother, I lose my job. My wife leaves me. My life is ruined.
Wow.
That's it. It's kind of concise.
You know what's amazing, Barney, is that I have that same exact scenario that's not a dream. you and I obviously share something in common. We have a wife. We have my brother's not a Republican, but I have a marginally high social profile, and my wife is not with me a lot of times. And as he said, not necessarily as a liberal, but certainly as somebody who has some time on their hands, we are wont to autoerotic hobbying. And I've actually had that fear.
Autoerotic hobbying? Is that what it's called?
Hey, that's what they call it in the guidebook. If you didn't get this year's guidebook, I don't know what the hell to tell you. Autoerotic Hobbying International? No,
oh, nothing. Okay.
Are there stickers on that book, too?
Sure.
Yeah, all about intelligent design.
Yeah, yeah. There are stickers that, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going there. But
masturbation is not a fact.
Barney, I did you go to Drudge Report? Because I think that is your picture there.
I was hoping it was a dream.
Thanks for sharing it, man. Take it easy.
Take care. Wow.
That was funny.
His brother plastered his... Wow.
Well, it's weird when you argue with family. I'm never good at I'm a nasty arguer when it comes to my brother. It's just so loaded. He sounded pretty diplomatic about it. But I think it's interesting that he's assumed that, one of the great liberal pastimes is autoerotic hobbying. I don't talk about it anymore because not so much that we don't cover it on this show, but I just thought, that after a certain point that people just don't talk about it. But, you know, I'm not going to do it.
Well, it seems like some people in our listening audience are certainly talking about it.
Hey, you know what? Read Sam Lipsight's book. It's the first book of our book club. Go to morningsedition.com and order Homeland by Sam Lipsight, because that book is all about autoerotic hobbying. Here, let me give you a taste.
Feeling is not quite the word for the feeling. How's bathing at knife point in the phlegm of the dead?
How's that?
Is that a feeling?
Oh, sorry, interrupted Sam. Ooh. Sorry, Sam. It certainly is a feeling. Here's Michelle in Maine. How are you, Michelle?
Hey! Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What's happening? You got a dream?
Oh, yeah. I have lots of weird dreams, but this has to be the weirdest.
Okay.
I was running around an area called Back Cove in Portland, running loop, and I came across Demi Moore, who was naked and holding a bow and arrow.
Wow.
Yeah. So I said, hi, what are you doing out here? And she said, I've left Hollywood. I've decided to become a naturalist.
Yeah.
And she had really long hair, but she had no breasts.
Uh-huh.
And I said, what's with the chest? And she said, well, when I left Hollywood, I had to give my agent back my boobs.
Yay!
Whoa!
So I high-fived her and kept running and wished her luck.
Oh, my God. That's a great dream.
It is a really good one, isn't it?
I don't even know what to do with that. But the best part of that, and I believe you, because that's just one of those weird moments where it's like she had to give her breasts back to her agent.
Wow.
You know what? You know why that's so weird is that, you know, that could probably be actually in a contract, that if you leave our agency, you can't have the boobs anymore.
I wouldn't be surprised. But, I would not be surprised.
So, I got to say, at the beginning of that was kind of exciting. And Yeah.
I know. My husband was hoping it had gone in a different direction as well.
Your husband was like, wait, she loses the boobs?
Yeah.
Come on, couldn't you alter that just a little?
Gotta have a better ending than
that. Don't say it to me. Go back to sleep. See what else happens.
Well, thanks for sharing that. That was great.
Thanks, Michelle.
Okay,
you
thanks,
take
guys.
Care. I don't even know. It says, let's see, but that Bat Cove is not the same as bats. I was going to look up bats here in our little dream dictionary. But just Demi Moore standing there with a bow and arrow, naked, long hair, you know, boobs have been returned. And, you know,
and she's a naturalist.
A naturalist.
Which I guess is the new term for nudism. Is that what it is?
I don't know what naturalism covers. I assume it's a pretty broad spectrum. Maybe living outdoors. Maybe, you know, why speculate? Why don't we do a little research and
find out what
the context of naturalism includes. Let's talk to Melissa, listening to LIB in Brooklyn. Melissa, how are you?
Hi, Melissa.
How you doing? Love the show.
Thank you. We're trying to listen to people's dreams. We're not doing a great job of analyzing them, but we're having a great time listening to them. You got a good one?
Well, it was kind of interesting. I actually dreamt that I was a maid in a hotel in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
And you were doing a USO show there.
Wow.
And I was fixing up your room.
Nice.
And Cheney was going to stay in the same hotel. So I was going crazy trying to keep you guys away from each other. And then I kept confusing your room.
Oh, wow.
I was running back and forth. I was like, which one gets the blue sheets? Which one gets the red sheets?
Oh, come on.
And I was filled with anxiety.
And now I'm filled with anxiety. I just had this image where all of a sudden I walk into Cheney's room. Oh, my God. That's an interesting dream. That's pretty frightening dream.
It was scary. I thought you guys were going to kill each other.
Yeah, I wonder who would have won that one. Yeah, I think I would have just had to, you know, get him running a little bit, and the heart would have exploded. And that's the easy way to kill a Cheney. Thanks for sharing your dream, Melissa.
Okay,
I appreciate
no
it.
Problem.
That was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I always wonder about dreams, you know, when you have these weird conflicting messages that she saw both of us and she was concerned, you know, for my safety, and she, you know, somehow, you know, took some sort of responsibility in the dream as, you know, getting things confused and not wanting, you know, me to get hurt by this horrendous neocon weirdo. Because, you know, I do talk a lot of, you know what I mean? I talk a lot of.
Yeah, but you could take him,
as you say.
Yeah, you could take him in a fight, man. Trust me.
Yeah, but could I take the guys he brings with him? You know what I mean?
Well, that might take some work, but in a fair fight, I got your back, man. With the other guys.
Okay, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Sneak up behind him, choke him out. What the hell?
Yeah, what the hell? It's, you know, it's all fair, you know.
That's right.
Are we taking
just
more
the
of
vice
time
president?
No, we gotta get going here in a minute. Those are exciting, man. So
they
we got that. We got Jim Moore coming up.
Yeah, Jim Moore. Jim Moore has been following George W. Bush seemingly since infancy.
You're going to be here in the second hour,
yeah,
or in the next hour towards the end of it. Love talking to him. He's he's great because there's nobody more wise about the rise of Bush and now the second. And I just want to hear Jim Morsive.
That's
I
right.
I want to hear his bitterness. I want to hear his assessment of what we have to look forward to for the next 4 years. Tomorrow we're going to have Ignore Duration Day.
That's
where
right.
We are going to turn our backs on an audio level on the inauguration of George Bush and instead focus on talking to incoming Democrats who won in red states. Thank you so much for your dreams. I tell you, you know, we'll probably try to brush up on our analysis, but it's certainly great to hear them, and I really enjoy talking to you people.
You people have some whack imaginations. Now, in the next hour, you'll hear our last conversation about what's happening on Thursday, because remember, tomorrow, we're not covering it.
That's right. And George's cousin's good. 15th cousin, Alice.
15th cousin, Alice. We'll cover her instead here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Good morning to all the aggravated, despairing people. Good morning to the elated people. Good morning to the haters, the happiers, all you folks. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just rambling on. I don't have a list of things to say. We just had a nice little exchange here. All we do is talk about food on the breaks. It's hilarious. Hilarious, Mark Riley. Here's what happens. You know, as you know, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, I don't know if you know this, but he literally has a special briefcase for wraps.
He's like a rap artist.
He's a rap artist. You know, he makes sandwiches, he makes six, and he'll pack them in a piece of plastic. Dan's got OCD.
And they'll last for months.
All right? Dan's got compulsive problems. And what he does is he somehow convinces all of us that these standards by which he lives. You know, that there's some sort of rules involved. And, like, you know, in what world a guy comes in with, I'm telling you, he'll come in with six wraps that he's made, but they're perfect. They're symmetrical. They're all the exact same size. They're exactly the same on the inside. And they'll take one of those plastic boxes that you get at the supermarket that comes with fresh pasta or something on the
floor. Or salad, yeah.
Right, and he'll line them up in there like sushi, all right? And, you know, if a guy comes into work like that, you know, there's two ways to look at it. Either you can say, wow, it's very efficient. It looks like you've got your meals prepared for the week. Or what's wrong with you? You have a problem. You have a compulsive problem. All right, but here's the deal is that because Dan's so excited about his disorder, what happened is that all of a sudden yesterday or 2 days ago, I'm standing there talking to Clutch Larson, and P.W. McDonald pulls a wrap sandwich out of his lunch bag. And I just look at him and go, oh, man, he gets in your head, doesn't he?
Yeah.
You know, and Fashman just like, you know, it infiltrates. Like, I just hope to God in a couple of weeks I don't come in saying, like, man, you know, the Black Crows, I've rethought it. We had a debate in here about the Black Crows last week.
And,
you know,
threatened to get ugly.
Yeah, well, you know, it is what it turns out to be more than anything else. It's just my personal histrionics musically. It wasn't even that I was defending, you know, U2 in relation to the Black Crows. It's just that, you know, I'm an old Stones guy. You know, I like, you know, and I like a lot of different rock and roll. I like the Faces, you know, I like, you know, Iggy Pop, I like the Stooges, I like a lot of people. But in my book, you know, the Black Crows, for whatever reason, don't have any integrity. And a lot of, you'd be surprised, as much politics as we talk about on this show, that debate generated more mail than I can even, like, imagine. You know, never have we talked about anything political on this show that generated as much mail as people going, Pashman's wrong, or Maron, you suck, Black Crows rule, you know. You know, and then there was the secret history lessons that I had to get. It's sort of like, you don't understand the history of blues. I am the blues, man. You know, I know Muddy Waters, all those cats. I know, you know, Slim Harpo. I know, Sonny Boy Williamson. I'm a blues fanatic, and I understand it all started with the blues. I get all that. Well, now I'm just rambling. But here's the deal. I understand that. It's just personally, I still think that the Black Crowes sort of, you know, ripped off their style. But people's argument was like, you know, everybody ripped off their style. It's an evolution. And I'm like, not as specifically. And I will give them that Southern Harmony Companion, whatever that first Black Crowes album, it's a very listenable album. I'm giving just a little bit, but I still have, see, he's getting into my head. He's getting into my head. I'm rethinking everything.
Uh-huh.
But I'd much rather listen to the Faces or the Stones or even the first three Aerosmith albums for that matter. and MC5 and the Stooges any day, the Gun Club. I don't care. You know, anybody, you know, I will not listen to the Black Crowes. I will not eat green eggs and ham, so I am. All right, so listen to this. Alice Copeland Brown is a Morning Sedition listener from Canton, Massachusetts, who happens to be George W. Bush's 15th cousin.
Yep.
Counts. That counts. It counts. She called into the program last week and told us she writes to her cousin on a fairly regular basis. Since then, we've been asking her to read us the letters she's been sending the president. So on the eve of the inauguration, we bring you the latest correspondence from Cousin Alice.
Dear Cousin George, today I met with a room full of patriotic dissidents, including Jonathan Simon, in the church you're a nominal member of, St. John's Methodist. They feel quite hopeless about the hypocrisy and lying coming from your mouth. Worse, these lies are being accepted by so many gullible, greedy, undereducated Americans, awash in materialism and the bread and circuses you foist upon us to make us forget we've lost our freedoms. We have 650,000 people in Massachusetts without medical insurance. At the ages of 55 through 64, their mortality rate is 43% higher than those covered by insurance. You're killing many of those fellow Americans you express compassion for in and out of uniform by allowing the HMOs and pharmaceutical companies to rob us blind. Did you know that our granddaddy John Tilley spent 5 nights in jail in London because this shy tailor refused to be told how to worship by a government as repressive as your reign is? How he must mourn you, his descendant, and your abuse of power. Have a great crowning. Be sure and invoke the God whose face you spit in, Antichrist that you are. Sincerely, Cousin Alice.
Oh, man! Wow! Antichrist that you are, and the dead relatives mourning the inauguration of the Antichrist again.
Putting figurative bullwhip
She's
to his
tremendous.
Behind.
She's tremendous. And so, so relevant in terms of, you know, what we were talking about earlier with Cobb County and Condoleezza Rice. And I just want to say one thing. I am not in any way criticizing Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman. I, too, have obsessive compulsive problems. You know, and I don't want to make fun of the sick, okay? Because, you know, there are people like us, you know, neurotic. He's not neurotic, though. He just has the obsessive compulsive thing. I, on the other hand, a little neurotic, a little bit. Not proud of it, not whining, okay? I like it.
Okay.
Okay? A lot of times, you know, obsession and compulsion equal passion, my friends.
But that's, you know, right. What? He's got that taste of optimism. There's a streak of optimism that runs through his OCD that is very rare among people with this disorder.
That would be the big difference between me and Dan Pashman. It's the streak of optimism. I'd much rather go the other way.
You know, I keep thinking he's going to walk in here and start saying, "The sun will come out tomorrow."
No, he'll choose a Black Crowes song.
Yeah, I know.
Or a Bruce Springsteen song. Yeah. Anyways, enough about Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman. New Jersey. We told Steve, listening to the mic in Madison, that we'd play this song. Chris, can we kick it, and then we're going to talk about Condi later?
I'm pleased to announce my nomination of Dr. Condoleezza Rice to be America's Secretary of State.
My love.
During the last 4 years, I've relied on her counsel.
There's only you in my life.
Benefited from her great experience.
The
strength. The grace.
I guess you could say it was love at first sight.
My first love.
I'm very grateful to you.
Your every.
My dear friend and mentor. I am very much looking forward to joining the fraternity.
And now I'm honored she has agreed to serve in my cabinet.
It is humbling.
I can't tell you how much I love Connie Rice.
He is one of the finest public servants our nation has ever produced.
I can't tell you how lucky I am.
No one else will.
It was my honor to serve alongside him.
And when we come together.
Now, that's an image that I particularly like.
Connie's true ambition is beyond my power to grant.
We have one future that binds us.
And Connie Rice is the right person for that challenge.
Ah, oh, isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the horror of Condi Rice when we come back. We're going to hear Barbara Boxer try to tear a new one and do a pretty good job at it, and maybe a little bit of something from Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Look forward to that, you know. The neocon death cult, Tomette Puppet Girl.
Condi's coronation when we come back.
All right.
You're listening to Morning Sedition.
We are the highest rated, most respected news show in America.
On Air America Radio.
Team Pass, the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Morning Sedition. There's been some concern expressed by our producer, Clutch Larson, over the Starbucks development here in the building. You know, because, you know, for a while there, some of the longtime listeners, the ones that are still with us out there, remember me during the intense coffee and M&M period. And then it became clear that it was affecting my mood disorder. That, like, when I was on the M&Ms and on the coffee, Riley, I was prone to yelling fits.
Fits of pique.
Fits of rage and strange conspiracy-ridden hostility. Yeah. Yeah.
That's okay. You only directed it at Larson. What's the problem?
No. I'm so scared of the documentary that's going to be on HBO. They're going to do a documentary about the Air America.
I know. March 31st.
And it's right at the beginning before. I'm going to start. The daily HBO disclaimer. We were just starting out. none of us really knew how this was going to turn out or what was going on. So I was, you know, nervous and probably acting out of a great deal of self-centered fear. All right, that said, here's the Bomb Pilot for today. I don't even know when it's on. It's awful. It's going to be repeated over and over again. It might be great. Who knows? It might be great.
Sure.
I'm just a little nervous.
We'll all get Oscars.
Oh, boy.
Emmys.
No.
Aces.
George W. Bush's Bomb Pilot brought to us by Ramon wearing epaulets and a Napoleon hat. 7 a.m. Wake up. Call John Kerry. Ask, so what are you doing today? 10 a.m. Call Condi. Congratulate her on her testimony and give her a friendly reminder that if she crosses me, I will crush her and everyone she loves. 5 p.m. Attend a Celebration of Freedom inaugural concert featuring the Gatlin Brothers, the Temptations, and the Rockettes. Note, wow, this is dorky even for me. 8:05 p.m. Attend Candlelight Dinner, Union Station. Note, dim lights, good food. Now's the time to invade Syria. 8:35 p.m. Attend Candlelight Dinner, National Building Museum. No dim lights. Good food. Now's the time to invade North Korea. 10 p.m. Attend Texas Black Tie and Boots Ball. Note, that means a black tie, boots, and a tuxedo. We'll make that mistake twice. 11:30 p.m. Rehearse for tomorrow. George W. Bush, screw it. Let Cheney do it. So, wow. Condi Rice.
Two candlelight dinners in the same night?
Dude, just run around, man. I was down there for Clinton's, and I got wasted. Oh, my God. That was crazy. That was a while back.
Yeah, well, you got to stay out of D.C. for these inaugural things, man, because everybody gets wasted.
Oh, it was crazy. I went to the MTV party, and I was in the celebrity pen. They had, like, the VIP section. It was just sitting there. It looked like a pen.
Is that where everybody comes and gawks at you?
It was elevated. No, there it was just like a little separate party in this roped-off area.
Yeah.
I swear to God, Uma Thurman flirted with me. Yeah, to this day. Yes, to this day.
And what happened?
I was so wasted, though. Oh. I mean, I was, it was ridiculous. I saw Lisa Marie Presley, you know? And I didn't know what to say to her, but I had this, I got weird fantasies. I thought I was going to marry Carolyn Kennedy when I was really young. And there was a period where I wanted to marry Elvis Presley's daughter just to be part of that, you know, because she was kind of hot before she became a Scientologist whack job. But when I saw her, it was one of those situations where I'm like, I got to think of something to say. I really got to think of something to say. And they just dedicated the Elvis Presley stamp.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I saw her in a little thing on TV at the stamp ceremony. I'm such an idiot. You know, I'm all drunk and whacked out on drugs. And I walk up to Lisa Marie Presley and go, I saw you at that stamp thing. What was that? What is that? And then when I got into the celebrity pen, I swear to God, I looked over and Uma Thurman was giving me the eye. I'd like to believe that. It was like there's one of those things in my head, Kayla, where I look back and I'm like, damn, I had an opportunity there, which is completely fabricated in my head.
Oh, maybe. That's okay.
Maybe. I don't know.
You can continue the fantasy. Don't worry about it.
All right, let's hear. I want to hear Barbara Boxer, you know, sparring it out with Condoleezza Rice in reference to, you know, her behavior over the last few years. Can we hear that, Kayla?
It wasn't just weapons of mass destruction. He was also a place, his territory was a place where terrorists were welcomed, where he paid suicide bombers to bomb Israel, where he had used Scuds against Israel in the past, and so we knew what his intentions were in the region, where he had attacked his neighbors before and, in fact, tried to annex Kuwait, where we'd gone to war against him twice in the past. It was the total picture, Senator, not just weapons of mass destruction that caused us to decide that post-September 11th, it was finally time to deal with the
Well, you should read what we voted on when we voted to support the war, which I did not, but most of my colleagues did. It was WMD, period. That was the reason and the causation for that, you know, particular vote. But again, I just feel you quote President Bush when it suits you, but you contradicted him when he said, yes, Saddam could have a nuclear weapon in less than a year. You go on television 9 months later and said nobody ever said it was going
to do. That was just a question of pointing out to people that there was an uncertainty, that no one was saying that he would have to have a weapon within a year for it to be worth it to go to war.
Well, if you can't admit to this mistake, I hope that you'll
Senator, we can have this discussion in any way that you would like, but I really hope that you will refrain from impugning my integrity. Thank you
very much. I'm just quoting what you said. You contradicted the president and you contradicted yourself.
Senator, I'm happy to continue the discussion, but I really hope that you will not imply that I take the truth lightly.
I say impugn her and imply all you want. Why not? None of the other Democrats did, except for Joe Biden, who, you know, took a couple of... He was pretty clever.
Yeah, he
can
was.
Can we hear that, Chris?
How many security forces do you think are trained that can shoot straight, kill, and stand their ground? I don't mean in a uniform. I mean real live guys that are Marines. I was spent 4 hours in Fallujah. Our Marines are not real anxious to stand next to and count on a lot of Iraqi forces, except the few that were trained as special forces. Now, how many do you really think are trained that Alawi could look to and say, I can rely on those forces? What do you think that number is?
Senator, I have to rely on what I get from the field. And by the way, I think that the trips that you've made and the trips that the others have made have given us information that we can go back with, and I appreciate your doing that. We think the number right now is somewhere over 120,000.
Well, I thank you for your answer. I think you'll find if you speak to the folks on the ground, they don't think there's more than 4,000 actually trained Iraqi forces. I strongly urge you to pick up the phone or go see these folks. And the reason I press it is not that the Iraqis aren't sacrificing. They are. But that's almost irrelevant in one regard. The exit strategy for America is a trained force of several hundred thousand people. We're talking about a year or more to get anywhere close to that. We should level with the American people about it.
There you go. See that? It's just very interesting. And even, you know, today you read about what's going on in Iraq, you know, and that, you know, candidates for government are being killed.
Are being assassinated on a daily basis. And here we have 120,000 on the one hand, 4,000. It's not like you're talking about the difference between 110,000 and 120,000. You're talking about a difference of 116,000, about the margin of George W. Bush's alleged victory in Ohio.
There you go. There you go. See, there's lies to go around for everyone.
Yeah.
What do we got?
We're going to debunk them. Yeah, Jim Moore is going to cut through the garbage.
And the war on brains, right?
Yeah, that
beautiful.
Too.
We'll talk to you in a minute. Yeah, 34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Having a stretch.
I'm stretching it out.
Ooh. Take a stretch, Riley.
I got to go to the gym, man. I can't stretch until I get to the gym.
Oh, can you clasp your hands around your back and pull on your shoulders like this? Oh, my God. I just heard something crack.
I'm going to try and put my left leg over my shoulder. Let me see.
Great radio.
It is good radio.
Ooh.
This is great. Don't hurt yourself, Riley. Hey, if you're driving, feel free to take a stretch. Challenge yourself.
Yeah.
What am I? Yeah, so look, if you want to get involved with this Cobb County thing and tell those people to stop narrowing the minds of their young people and pushing intelligent design upon them and devaluing the science of evolutionary theory, you can go to our website and we can give you the home numbers of the Cobb County School Board members, and you can give them a call and just tell them that you think they're dumb monkeys. Because really, what it comes down to, intelligence design, is it's so complicated, it must be magic. Tomorrow is Ignoration Day on Morning Sedition. I know it's a cute term, but we are basically turning our back on an audio level to the inauguration of the president because we don't like him.
That's right. And you want to hear anything about the inauguration, you better listen for the next 20 minutes because that's it for us.
Yeah, and we are going to spend the morning talking to incoming Democrats who won in red states as opposed to just sitting here going, look at their party. They're stupid. Look, they're having so much fun. I hate them.
The Gatlin brothers.
Hey, look, there's that guy I hate. You know why I hate him? Let me get the book out.
I'm burning my old Temptations records. I'll never listen to My Girl again.
Well, guess what? Hold on to your seats, folks. Every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the four-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mark Milfington.
Dateline, Washington, D.C., home of the United States Department of Commerce and the patent application for my anti-gravity machine. Why the holdup, Washington? Frightened of experiencing what it's like to float effortlessly in midair without the use of pulleys or supports? I thought so. Like a malodorous goo laid in a arroyo of sewage, with its noxious effluvium relentlessly rising to its source, the forces of George W. Bush. No, wait, start over. Like the dog that inevitably returns to his own vomit. George W. Bush. No, wait, start over. Like a rasping arachnoidal jackanape who pumps her victim full of venom, liquefying its insides with Aurelian newspeak and laying her demon eggs within a once sacrosanct symbol of reason. So has the Bush administration lured into her dank lair yet another victim, the National Academy of Sciences. This week, the true axis of evil, the White House, Defense Department, and defense industry pressured the NSA to release a report raising the allowable amount of rocket fuel pollutants in this nation's drinking water to 20 times its previous level. Rocket fuel in our drinking water? What are we, the Jetsons? That the president could think this country's life-giving nectar, Kool-Aid, Tang, and bourbon could ever be mixed with an allowable amount of rocket fuel? Shameful. That they would seek to raise that amount by 20 times? Ignominious. That he would manipulate science at the public's expense and in the process ruin the reputation of the National Academy of Sciences? Not so surprising. Allowable amount of rocket fuel. Thank goodness I never drink from the tap. During these anxious times, I only drink from my stockpile of emergency water, straight from the toilet tank.
Oh, God.
You heard me. It's clean, convenient, and if it weren't for that ball-cock flush valve assembly, I'd be able to get my whole face in there.
Wait. Well, back up, Mort. If you drink from your toilet bowl, aren't you still ingesting rocket fuel pollutants?
Not if you cut the water line and fill it with Perrier, my friend. And it's the tank, not the bull, all right? There's a big difference.
Well, this is terrible. What exactly can this stuff do to us?
Well, in a nutshell, Mark,
yeah.
Rocket fuel's main chemical, perchlorate, can inhibit the intake of iodide, causing, among other things, a severe dumpness of the tongue. Followed closely by doing parrot noises. In some cases, it can be fatal. Mark, do you think it is bad for you to eat that blue dissolvey thing in the back of the toilet?
I think probably is, Mark.
That's too bad. I think I need a mint. Until next time, Peter Piper, weave, wipe, we bit. And that's the day did by a form. The War on Brains.
Oh, man.
Whoa.
Are you okay? You going to be all right?
Yeah, I got the blue thing in the it just stays in your mouth. It's got a nice mint taste to it, though.
I think you got some on your chin, man. You got to wash up, Mort.
All right. Hey, can I just say something?
Sure.
I agree with Larry King when he says the Phantom of the Opera is one of the greatest films of all time.
Man, you really, you have eaten too much of that thing.
Wow.
Yeah, try to have a good day, Morris.
Thank you very much. Oh, God.
And I thought eating urinal cakes was a bad idea. My goodness.
Hey, Morris.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, be careful, will you?
Please.
Whatever.
All right. I was waiting for that. All right. On the phone, joining us from Austin, Texas. He is the author, co-author of the 2003 New York Best Times bestseller, Bush's Brain, How Karl Rove Made George W. Bush Presidential. He's also the author of Bush's War for Reelection, Iraq, the White House, and the People. He is Jim Moore. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Guys, I thought I was just having a bad dream, and it turned out it was you.
Yeah.
That was a good dream.
Good talking to you, Jim.
Yeah. Dude, hey, so, Jim, we got to do this all over again? You must be seething with contempt and bitterness.
But it's the George Bush Full Employment Act for Jim Moore, you know? I'm probably the only guy in America who has a financial reason to vote for this guy.
No one knows him better than you in terms of what he can do politically. Is he going to suffer, from the second-term curse that has plagued several recent presidents there? Is he going to become a lame duck?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Mark, because I think that what we're seeing is some of these policies that he's proposing, like messing with Social Security and that sort of thing, are causing some of the Republicans who face re-election in their next district to balk a little bit and go, wait a minute, Mr. President, I'm not so sure I can sell this to the folks back home. And you know, the second term is when you worry about your legacy. You don't have to fret over re-election, so you start thinking, well, what am I going to leave behind that people are going to remember me by? And I think George Bush faces the prospects that what he's going to be remembered by is a war that he lied America into. The whole Social Security thing is just another example of fear tactics being used to try to accomplish something that doesn't need to be done.
Now, Jim, he seems to be saying, and we read something, I think it was at the end of last week, where he kind of issued a veiled threat that Republicans in particular, who didn't back him on the Social Security thing, would face the wrath of voters at the ballot box. Yet, it is that same wrath of voters that seems to be leading the Republicans to take issue with him on this. Who's right?
Well, I think the polls show that Americans are afraid of anybody messing with this, and I think what the president is really doing is issuing a veiled threat that take a look around at what we've done to our political enemies. And Carl's been very good at neutering people who resist the president and resist his policies. And I think the president was sending a message, okay, if you don't support this, when it comes time for you to run in your district, you're going to face fundraising challenges, and we're going to find a really smart person to challenge you in the primary and make your life real friggin' miserable.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was an article that Seymour Hersh published in this week's New Yorker about the possibility of the Bush administration taking military action against Iran. How in the world can they think about doing this as thin as our troops are stretched in Iraq?
Well, they wouldn't send our troops in. Iran has an army of like a million troops, and they're clearly not going to send U.S. soldiers in. But what they are considering doing is tactical strikes against any nuclear facility that Iran is developing. And I think that they're trying to say, and this is, guys, you got to understand, this is why we have so many problems in the Arab world. The Arab world looks at Israel and says, look, they have the third largest nuclear arsenal in the world. They've never signed the non-proliferation treaty. They do not even formally acknowledge that they have a nuclear arsenal. And yet here is Iran, the Arabs are saying, and Iran simply wants to fire up nuclear energy for whatever reasons. Is it defense or is it for energy? We don't know at this point. But the Iranians are saying we have as much right to do this to defend ourselves as Israel does. But the United States government and Israel are saying we're going to find those targets, and when we feel the moment is appropriate, we're going to take those targets out. And that would be done probably with Harpoon missiles or F-16s, or the Israeli Air Force would go in and blow them up.
Well, this administration has a tremendous problem with Muslim populations that are doing anything other than, you know, funneling oil money to them.
Yeah, that's the whole problem. And I think the American public We never listened. We've never gone back and looked at the context of what the United States of America has done in the Arab world, all the way back to propping up the Shah of Iran and then training his secret police, to torture people. Those guys were trained in this country at Michigan State University, sadly. And then when they finally overthrow the Shah, our country goes and gives money to Saddam and says, and we give him WMD and say, go fight the Iranians because we don't like what's going on over there. You know, when Saddam was our bad boy, he was an okay bad boy.
Sure, the neocon death cult loves Muslims who make them a bunch of millions of dollars.
Yeah, that's precisely it. And,
yeah.
But you know, the Arab world, and much of the Arab world is finally said, you know, we can't take this anymore. And I mean, look, people are strapping bombs to themselves,
yes,
blowing themselves up to kill us, and the president is using a simplified explanation to say, they hate our freedom. What an insult to the intelligence of the American people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, his whole presidency is. Are you going to watch the inauguration, Jim?
I can't.
Yeah, we're not either.
Us either.
Not unless somebody gives me a bottle of soothing pink Pepto-Bismol to drink while I'm watching it.
I may have to have some soothing pink Pepto-Bourbon to watch this.
Hey, Jim, thanks a lot. I'm glad you talked to us. Hey, we'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, it's my pleasure, guys. Always happy to talk to you.
All right,
take care,
man.
Jim.
That's Jim Moore, the author of Bush's Brain, How Karl Rove Made George W. Bush Presidential, also the author of Bush's War for Re-Election, Iraq, the White House, and the People, coming to us from Austin, Texas, knows the president better than most journalists. We'll be back with in summation and talk about a little bit more about Condi Rice, a little bit more about Cobb County, about our plans for tomorrow, and that kind of stuff. 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Courtesy of Air America Radio.
One past the hour. It's Morning's Edition. We're going to put this thing down. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
Tomorrow is Inauguration Day on Morning's Edition, while the rest of the media is lining up to worship at the altar of the neocon death cult. The neocon death cult puppet King Bush. Will spend the morning talking to incoming Democrats who won in red states. I'm not going to sit and report on what's going to happen tomorrow by saying, oh, look at all the people we don't like having fun.
Oh, man, is it another inauguration?
There's that guy we hate celebrating. Yeah, what is that?
Hey, but there's a German Bugle Corps, I know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I hope he doesn't look at the president. Oh, because, as you know, as far as instructions to performers, they've been instructed to not to look directly at Bush while passing the presidential reviewing stand, not to look to either side, and not to make any sudden movements, because there's going to be snipers on duty. So if you go for that Kleenex a little too fast, God bless America. Here's some other ones. No one is allowed to be taller than the president. Look at the thin guy up front. No one is allowed to be thinner than the president. He's very sensitive about that. That's what that was about. No eye rolling and sighing at the president. And there's going to be snipers, so look at the guy who's sitting there going, oh, this is awful. Look for the little red dot on the forehead. Look at that. It's a blood shower. So, moving on. Cobb County. If you want to get involved with the Cobb County trip, this is the deal. The members of the Suburban District School Board plan to challenge a federal judge's order to remove stickers in science textbooks that call evolution a theory, not a fact. The exact reading of the disclaimer, quote, this textbook contains material on evolution. Evolution is a theory, not a fact, regarding the origin of living things. This material should be approached with an open mind, studied carefully, and critically considered. Unlike religion, which should just be blindly accepted because it makes so much more sense if you're stupid. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, look, I understand the nature of belief, but to basically say we would rather restrict our students' ability to engage in scientific explanation of natural phenomenon and allow them, entitle them to have the cop-out of intelligent design is ridiculous. Evolution is not a theory, and it is accepted science, and it involves many of the processes of life, of adaptation, of the bottom line is basically what you're saying, even with evolution. Even the ones that are willing to lean a little towards, accepting that God created the earth, but leaning a little towards evolution, say it doesn't explain everything. which basically is saying, look, it's so complicated. It's so complicated, and I don't understand it, so it must be magic.
Oh, yes, intelligent design, that's who did it.
And dig this, it's working. Cobb County's stifling of the educational process on behalf of their school board, and this is something, the reason we get obsessed with this and focus on this is that, you know, these narrow-minded people who insist on taking education away, disabling the young people of this country's ability to get a fact-based education as opposed to an education based on very specific mystical beliefs of a very specific type of religiosity, is heinous. And they infiltrate the school boards across the country. And I'll tell you something, in Cobb County, it's working.
Yeah.
It's working, people. In the science section of the Georgia State High School graduation exam, Cobb County student scores have dropped over the past 2 years. In 2002, 88% passed the science section. But in 2004, 80% passed the science section. We're winning, people. Hopefully by next year we'll get it down to 75%, and maybe someday all of the young people of this country can be retarded with religion. That's right, folks. That's what we're working towards here, intentionally retarding the young people of this country and giving them religion to make sure that their views stay narrow and that they never question anything, especially stuff that has been attempted to be explained by scientists who know things. Whoa, don't trust those guys in the white coats. They're dangerous.
You know what's going to stop this in its tracks? Mm. You know what's going to stop all of this foolishness in
tell
its
me,
tracks?
Tell me, my friend. Tell me.
The day that colleges stop accepting students from these districts.
Yeah.
That's when they'll stop this nonsense. Because they're not going to do this at pain of their kids not getting into the college of their choice.
What, are you kidding me? Like, that's going to happen. Do you breathe? Yes. Do you have money to pay for school? Uh-huh. Welcome. Come on in. Sit right down. I've got a diploma waiting for you.
Well, that's if they go to Bob Jones University. They're not all going there. There's not enough room.
No, I assume, as we've talked to some parents who have said, that, you know, kids are onto this. The kids that haven't been too mentally abused by the religious fanatic parents, they actually say this is crazy. You know, whereas opposed to people who are crazy rarely know they're crazy, and thus they will continue to repeat the same thing over and over again, expecting different results.
Do you believe?
In God.
Do you believe?
Sure.
Do you believe?
Oh, thank God, off the hook. Here's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today. One, last-minute pre-inaugural preparations. Tomorrow is not one damn dime day. And for vegans, not one damn burger day. And for atheists, not one damn God day. And for lesbians, not one damn penis day. Two, iron your pants so when you turn your back on Bush during the parade, it's smooth and neat for the cameras. Three, hire band, caterers, and valet parking for anti-inaugural party to protest the fat cats living it up in Washington today. There you go. Four, cry over tragedy of Bush's inaugural first thing in the morning, then no more today or tomorrow. Must put on brave face. We're moving on. Five, today's phrase, drop it in the conversation. Yeah, I got a question for Dr. Rice. How do you sleep, man? Answer me that. Wake up, sheeple. It's coming down.
That's right.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Some people are going to fast. Some people are going to pray. Some people are going to skip work. Some people are going to protest. All kinds of things. We are going to ignore. We are going to talk to some good politicians who are getting inaugurated this year. That doesn't mean the guy in D.C. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Air America Radio. Have a good one, Maren.
You too, Riley.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.